Check, 1, 2, 3. How many of you are here for part one, when we do part one of this one? Shape for Significance. It was a little hot that day. The air conditioning wasn't working. So we decided to break it up in two parts. We're just going to wrap it up today. And someone can tell me when it's 6 o'clock. That's 23 minutes from now. We'll try and bring it to a close. But just to recap what we covered the first time, Lord loves variety. Not only in insects and plant life and mammals, but he also loves variety in human beings. Anyone who spent a couple of hours in LAX airport waiting for a plane knows how much variety there is in human beings. In fact, there's far more variety than what we could enjoy. Only the Lord could enjoy the countless variety that exists in the creation. And we're also, each one of us, unique in three different ways. We're one of a kind. We're very complex, even to ourselves, and we're shaped for a purpose. When the Lord made each and every one of us, he broke the mold. He's not interested in carbon copies. He took the trouble and the time and the craftsmanship to make each and every one of us unique. He didn't cut corners. And not only did he make us unique, but he also made us very complex, which means he didn't cut corners in that way either. He could have made copies, you know, he could put one of you here and another one of you in a far corner of the universe, and he knew you'd never met, you'd never compare notes, so he'd get away with that one. But that's just not his nature. He likes unlimited variety. Or he could have made you simple. He could have made you simple and saved time and energy in that way. But he didn't. He made each living being unlimitedly complex. And the reason he did that is because he wants each and every one of us to know how particularly special we are. These are some of the points that we covered the last time. We don't even understand ourselves a lot of the times. We're mysteries to ourselves. And our unique personality has five features. I think we covered the first three last time. We'll just briefly go through those and then concentrate on the last two and then wind it up. S are your spiritual gifts. H is your heart. A is abilities. Then personality and then experiences. Those are the things that make you what you are. When you become a surrendered devotee of the Lord, he preserves what you have and he carries what you lack. Look at the example of Srila Prabhupada, a 70-year-old man who left Vrindavan, the holiest place of India, on the order of his spiritual master, came to America with no money, having had two heart attacks on the voyage over, didn't know anyone in America, and he's going to tell the hippies to give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Good luck, right? Nobody does that on their own. They get a special gift from the Lord in order to be able to achieve such a monumental task. So when you surrender, you get a special gift. It's a supernatural gift and enables you to do something or some things which no ordinary being could do on their own, only through the mercy of the Lord. The prime example of that is Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was given the gift of being able to create the universe. And I think we all agreed last time, that's a pretty significant gift, right? That's something that, ordinarily we wouldn't be able to create a universe. And so Lord Brahma got the gift that he would not only create the universe, but he would also be the first guru in the line of disciplic succession. We receive transcendental knowledge through the chain of disciplic succession, beginning with Jagat Guru, God, and extending down through an unbroken line of spiritual masters. That's how we receive transcendental knowledge. So Lord Brahma is the first guru in our line of disciplic succession. Whatever we're speaking today or any Sunday or in any one of the 400 Christian temples all over the world, it was originally spoken by Lord Brahma to his disciple Narada Muni and passed down in disciplic succession. And whatever benefit we get, whatever transformative effect that these teachings have in our lives, then that's to the credit of Lord Brahma. So that's a special gift, wouldn't you say? A special gift to do good. And each and every one of our special gifts, when it's discovered, will be a gift to do good. And in doing good to other people, you'll do the best good to yourself as well. And we shouldn't try and be in a rush to find out what our special gift is by comparing to other people. You know, that's something we covered last time. We talked about pizza devotees and pakora devotees, the conservatives versus the liberals. They always seem to be at odds. The liberals want to be innovative and change things, just like I'm standing up. I thought, well, you know, I'll just try standing up this week and see how it works. You know? Well, the Pecora devotees wouldn't like that at all. You're standing up. You know, Prabhupada never stood up like that. So I can't help it. I'm a pizza devotee. So the heart also, the heart, you know, what where your heart is. Everyone has a different heart. And in marital life, have you wives found out that your husband's heart is not exactly in every place that your heart is? Husbands, have you found out that your wife's heart is not in every place that your heart is? This creates a lot of problems in marriage because you can't change another person's heart. Men's hearts are in mechanical things and football, and women's hearts are in changing diapers, you know. And I don't think you're going to change that, and that you're going to create a lot of unnecessary tension in your marriage if you try to change that. You just have to work with it. I see some of you saw the joke, right? Honey, anything you want to say to me before football season starts? His heart is obviously one place, different from his wife's. We'll just skip past here. One who sees the super soul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind, thus he approaches the transcendental destination. So if our heart is actually focused on the Lord of the heart, Krishna, then we see all living beings as our part, as his parts and parcels, and our kinship, our brothers. We have love and respect for every living being. It doesn't matter what their present condition, their present circumstances. It doesn't even matter whether they're in a human body. Vaishnavas who see the super soul everywhere give respect even to the ant, what to speak of the human beings. And thus they don't degrade themselves by their mind. Black, white, man, woman, Christian, Hindu, mammal, vegetable. These are all names. That's all they are. They're just names. They're concoctions of the mind. And they don't unify us. They set us apart. So once one sees the super soul everywhere, one experiences creation and all living beings integrally as part of the same transcendental family. And one never degrades himself by the mind. So that's shape, that's our spiritual gifts, that's our heart, and then A is abilities. How many different abilities are there even in this room? Some of you are great at computers, and some of you are scared to death of computers. Good at mechanical things, others not good. Some people are good at public speaking. Some people aren't. We're still trying to get Wendy to lead a yoga class. And it's not looking good. But she has other talents that are unique to her. That are unique to her. Things that other of us can't do. Some people are good with numbers, you know. So some people, you know, everybody they talk to comes along in the temple. They just spend 5 minutes in the grocery store. They talk to a cashier. And here he is, you know, the next day with his girlfriend. It's a gift, you know. Some people just have that kind of ability. And other people, no matter how much you talk to them, they don't end up coming to the temple. Who knows? You know, it's just a wonderful gift. Some people are abstract thinkers, and some people are engineers. Some people cook, and some people don't cook, and draw, research, and landscape. All these different abilities are meant to form one symphonic whole for the glorification of the Lord in the service of other living beings. So if you're not good at one thing, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're good at something, and just find out what that is, you know. And don't compare yourself to someone else. These are some of the ways you can identify your talents and your abilities. First of all, realize that you are unique. You're God's poem, that He took time and trouble to create you just like you. There isn't anyone else in the world, in the universe, with your voice print, with your fingerprint, with your handprint. So why did He do that? Because He has a particular ability that He's invested with you, and you need to find out that ability or those abilities and use them. Otherwise, it's like a jigsaw puzzle with a part missing. It doesn't make sense. So you need to find out your abilities, use them for your own benefit, and use them for other people's benefit. And if we don't, then we're cheated, and other people are missing out on the wonderful things that we could have brought them as well. And in trying to do that, just think back over your life and think about the things that you like doing. That's obviously the first place to start. If I have an ability, it's going to be something that I enjoy doing. It's going to be something that I have fun doing, whether it's music or cooking or landscaping, whatever it may be. And then I may have an ability that I haven't particularly identified for myself, but in the course of doing devotional service or organizing for a festival or preparing a Sunday feast or decorating the altar, organizing a special event, someone may have said to you, you know, you're really good at that. You really have a good voice. Or, wow, that chutney you made is out of this world. 30 years ago in Australia, there was a devotee named Korma. You know where this is going, don't you? And Prabhupada visited Australia, and Korma, he hadn't found his niche, but various devotees, you know, they were assigned the task of cooking different meals for Prabhupada. So Korma cooked one sort of a brunch for Prabhupada, and it included puris. When Prabhupada tasted the puris, he said, "Who has made these puris?" And they said, "Korma." And Prabhupada said, "He is going back to Godhead." So now Korma is probably the most famous vegetarian cook in the world, with a number of books to his credit, television series, travels all over the world giving cooking classes. So there's an instance where your guru, who is very, very experienced in devotional service, who knows you and may be able to see parts of your heart that you can't see, your guru has said, "Wow, you know, if you continue this, you go back home, back to Godhead." So think about, you know, what God brothers or even your guru has said that you're good at, and consider whether that might be a fun way to spend your Krishna conscious career. And then this is what we didn't cover last time. The last two characteristics are P and E, personality as well as experience. Did you know there are 18,000 different personality traits? And for a long time, social scientists debated whether we get our personality, whether we've already brought our personality with us at birth, or whether our personality is cultivated by behavior and by circumstances and by training. And that debate is over. That's no longer being debated. It's called the nature or nurture debate. Do we have that nature a priori, or is it come about as a result of the interactions after birth? It's no longer a debate. It is nature. It is not nurture. We bring our various personalities with us into the womb of our mothers. And just look at these different pictures of babies and tell me if they're all the same. This little guy, you know, he's got smoking a cigar. He's got to do, when he's in the old age home, he's probably going to be wheeling and dealing, you know, with bottles of milk and magnesia and bedpans, you know. That's the way he is, you know. He says, "I got a chip on my shoulder, and come on, I dare you to knock it off." Here's the cute, cuddly baby in the upper right hand side. Here's Bill Gates, lower right hand side. And I just went to a retreat, a youth retreat in North Carolina. And one of the other invitees was a devotee named Partha Sarathi. He spent 3 years as a master sergeant in Iraq. And he's got tattoos all over the place. And he's a rough-talking, hard-living guy. Chants 64 rounds a day. Preaches about the mates of his that died in his arms in Iraq. With pictures of Krishna in their helmets and all like that. And this baby reminds me of Partha Sarathi, incoming. So personality is something that, you know, we just have. Any of you are parents, and you've sat around the dinner table, and you've seen the various antics of your children. You know, some of them are well-behaved, and some of them are just always mischievous and always talking about getting in trouble. I'm sure you've wondered, you know, out of my loins, you know, this variety has come. An amazing thing. And that's something that you bring with you. That's something that's unique. It's something that's you. And then the last thing is experience. Spiritual gifts, heart, abilities, personality, and then experience. And I just have these quotes here, which shed a lot of light in the area. John Stuart Mill says, "There are many truths of which the full meaning cannot be realized until personal experience is brought at home." Aldous Huxley: "Experience is not what happens to a man, it's what a man does with what happens to him." Very deep. Thirdly, by Franklin Jones: "Experience is that marvelous thing that enables you to recognize a mistake when you make it again." And this one, S.P. Kadma: "A little experience often upsets a lot of theory." That's why our Krishna conscious movement is going to be spread in the trenches. That's why the people that make a commitment to a certain area, to a certain community, they're going to be the ones that ultimately spread Krishna consciousness. If you commit to a certain area, commit to a certain community, people will commit to you. Otherwise, you can't expect a commitment from them if you haven't made a commitment to them. And so, a little experience upsets a lot of theory. It's very well to have traveling preachers going all over the world, but nothing can replace the person that's dedicated their life in one place, in under one set of circumstances to one type of people. Those are the indispensable dog soldiers. The Catholic Church spread itself all over the world through the Jesuits. The Jesuits were very highly educated, very intelligent people, but they just picked a town in Ecuador and they went there and they spent their life there and they committed. And as a result of their committed, people committed to them, and Catholicism was spread all over the world. So traveling is all very nice, but it's also nice to stay in one place as well. The diary of a non-traveling preacher. And this is dharma. You know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we immediately hear this term dharma. Dharma means duty or intrinsic characteristic which you cannot change. For instance, the dharma of a chili is to be hot. The dharma of water is to be liquid. The dharma of sugar is to be sweet. It's that characteristic that you can't take away from the thing and have it still be the thing itself. So our dharma is service. We're all servants. Even the President of the United States is president only as long as he serves the country. When the country no longer feels he's serving them, then they'll impeach him, or they'll won't re-elect him, or they'll put someone else in his place. So we all serve, and beyond that we serve hunger, thirst, we serve the laws of material nature, birth, death, disease, and old age. So we're all servants. But what kind of servants we are? Generally speaking, our dharma of all of us is service. But each individual one of us has a particular gift, a particular personality, which qualifies us to do a kind of service which nobody else can do. And that's called Swadharma. And you cannot ignore that. You cannot bypass that. You cannot duck it. Look what happened to Arjuna. When Arjuna, who was a warrior, tried and true warrior, suggested to Krishna that he abdicate from the battlefield, leave the forces of evil, and let them have the day, and go into the forest and meditate, Krishna said, no, not a good idea. Not a good idea. Krishna gave him so many reasons why he should fight. But the last reason was, you're going to fight anyway. Because you cannot do otherwise. That's your nature, and what can repression accomplish? One time, a camel and a scorpion met on the bank of a river. And the scorpion asked the camel, would you please take me across the river? And the camel said, you think I was born yesterday? You think I'm stupid enough to take a scorpion on my back across the river? And the scorpion said, really, really, you know, I'm not dumb either. I realize that I need not to bite you, because if I bite you, we're both going to drown. So I wouldn't be that stupid. So you can be safe. You can be assured that I will not bite you or sting you while we're crossing the river. And the camel said, well, that makes sense. I think we can have a truce on that basis. So go ahead and climb up, partner. And then the camel started swimming across the river. And halfway across the river, the scorpion stung the camel. And the camel said, what are you doing? What are you doing? That wasn't the deal. We're both going to die now. It doesn't make any sense at all. Why did you do this? And the scorpion said, I can't help it. It's my nature. It's my nature. There's a saying that just as cows love fresh grasses, cows just hanker. We send llamas out. We send a couple of llamas out to Idaho today. And the llamas are just dying to go because they don't get much fresh grass around here and they're tired of eating hay. So I'm sure that just as the people, the Boy Scouts that rent the llamas, dream of being in some mountain meadow, eating their sandwiches and their sweets and their cookies and all like that, when the llamas mount up and get into the trailer, they're also dreaming of nice, fresh, young, juicy grasses. So just as grasses are very dear to a cow, and as a cow, a mature cow, lusts after green grasses, that the calf of that cow lusts after the milk of the mother. And it says, just as Brahmins, the priests in Vedic society, they hanker after sweets. So you've got a sort of a rhythm and a succession here. Just as cows hanker after fresh grasses, just as calves hanker after the milk of their mother, just as Brahmins hanker after sweets, Kshatriyas hanker after war. Now this is Arjuna. He's a Kshatriya. He's a warrior. So Krishna says, you can't change your nature. You can't be someone else. You can't not be you. So spiritual life doesn't mean that you become someone else. It just means that you become you. Those who cross over and become spiritually enlivened, they feel like they've been sleepwalking prior. That all of a sudden their sleeping senses become awake and they're experiencing things for the first time. So you don't change. You just do what you do. You do it well. You have fun doing it, but you do it for God. You do it for the benefit of God. And here's the verse. Yad karosi yad ishnas yad nahos nas yad yad tapasu sikante yad karushmet arpanam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 9:27, whatever, don't do what's unnatural. Do what's natural. But whatever you do, whether you're teaching, or whether you're playing music, or whether you're cooking, or whether you're working computers, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do them as an offering to me. Just dovetail. That's the nature of spiritual life. And then Krishna warns Arjuna, if you try to do something else, if you try to be someone else, then compelled by the word born of your own nature, you'll act the same way anyway. So why should I understand my shape? Why should I take the trouble before I embark upon this journey of life? Why should I take the trouble to find out who I am and what it is I'm uniquely created to do? You know, I just went to North Carolina, and it was interesting because I was invited to address a youth retreat, about 30 young people that were there to spend the week. But the community itself was older godbrothers like myself in their early 60s. And I had joined the movement with them, and we're all peers and so on and so forth. So many of those godbrothers came up to me, and they lamented. They said that, you know, I want to serve Krishna, but I just thought I would just do a little something to ensure my own personal security first, and then I'd get all that taken care of, and then I'd serve Krishna. But it never happened. It never happened. We ended up selling insurance, or going to trade shows, or doing the pick in parking lots, and they're still not secure. Because there is no security in this material world. I mean, just look at what the stock market did in the last year or so. Or the fact that anyone could drop dead of a heart attack at any moment. So where is security? But whole seasons of our lives can be missed just by not understanding what it was that I was uniquely shaped to do. And if you find it out, you need to do it right away. Don't put it off. Do it right away. Because that's why you're created. That's why you're put here. So don't do something else or don't be someone else, but be you. And the benefits are that finding out my shape, that reduces stress, it increases success, it deepens satisfaction, and it increases self-esteem. When you understand your shape, it explains why you respond to authority the way you do, why you make friends or don't make friends the way you do, how you deal with confrontational situations, how you handle power and freedom, how you handle criticism, how you deal with guilt, how you emphasize what you do, why you're popular or why you're unpopular, or why you do or you don't get close to people, why you get mad, why you get worried, what makes you happy, what makes you fearful. All these things are occurring, can be explained based on your shape. And they're not wrong. They're just you. That's all there is. So don't try to do what you're not gifted to do. Build on your strengths. Maximize what you're good at and don't worry about the rest. And that will reduce stress. Just be whoever you are. And you see the cartoon in here. Jesus is walking on water, and some of the bystanders are a little envious, and so it looks like they've rented some I don't know what you call those, foot paddles like that, and they're trying to do something that they're just not built to do. Then, knowing your shape brings success. Success is not making money. Success is not being popular. There are plenty of people that make money. There are plenty of people that are popular. And if you ask them in the quietude of their moments, they'll tell you that they don't feel successful. Success and significance come from doing service. That's why we're created here. It's not actually about us. There's all kinds of self-help books and books on how to achieve success. But the problem is you're starting from the wrong point because it's not about us. It's about God having created us to do a particular service and to be what we are meant to be. And when you find out who you are and what you enjoy doing on behalf of God, you feel like you're a successful human being. It's not just a question of how much money you have in the bank or how many votes you get from a public. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Shraddharmam Shayam. It's better under or over. It's 6 o'clock. Okay. Krishna says, better to do your own duty, or in other words, better to be yourself, even though you make mistakes, than to do something else, to do someone else's duty, or to be someone else, even though you do it perfectly. Better to do your own. So find your niche, and say, that's me, that's success. I told my peers in North Carolina, I'm not any special person, but I am doing what I was created to do. I mean, this is me. This is me. I went to the video cams a couple years ago. Los Angeles is an hour before us. We have our Janmashtami celebrations coming up this coming Saturday. So 2 years ago, we finished our Janmashtami celebrations, and we had the art team. And while the feast was being served out, I nipped back into my office, and I went on the Los Angeles Temple webcam. And they were just coming up. For them, for us it was 12:30, for us it was 11:30. And they were just coming up to the midnight hour when Krishna appeared. And Savas was giving a little talk, and he said, I love my life. This is the temple president of Los Angeles. He said to the packed town, he said, I love my life. And I'm sitting there, and Janmashtami is over, and it's 12:30, and we're about to serve prasad, we've been fasting all day. And I said to myself, you know, I do too. I do too. I really love my life. And if you're fortunate enough to find your shape in Krishna consciousness, you love your life, you love what you're doing, you won't waste whole seasons of your life trying to do something you're not meant to do and trying to be someone that you're not meant to be. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activity, and never be attached to not doing your duty. That's what you have a right to. You have a right to be you, and you have a right to enjoy being you, and you have a right to benefit yourself and other people in the course of it. But you don't have a right to enjoy the fruits of that talent, because that talent is God-given. And it's God-given to you to help others, not to put money in your bank, or not to put your name on other people's lips. Teenagers. It's lamentable that teenagers feel so much pressure to conform. You know, we have a certain template that we want to plug all the young people in, and the result is to keep the economy going and expanding, and construction booming, and the gross national product going on. And there's so much pressure for every young person to go to university, to go to graduate school, to get this degree, to get this job, and so on and so forth. But that's not necessarily what's going to bring you success and significance. Not everybody is going to get success and significance by going to college. The greatest multi-mega millionaires in the world did not get success through a college degree. Most of them did not go to college. Why are they successful? Because they were able to identify at an early age what they were good at, and they were able to do it even from their teens. So not only do they get a running start, but by the time other people are just getting out of graduate school, they are masters of the trade. They are masters of the trade. So the greatest people did not go to college. Most of the most successful people, the greatest, it's not for everybody. It's for some people, but it's not that everybody has to go to college. If you know, if you find out, or if you go to college, then don't you think it's an advantage to take the courses that are you know, the courses that are actually going to be helpful, rather than just following some template like a bunch of other people. So after hearing from Krishna about his own nature, Arjuna, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, his confusion is gone, his doubt is dispelled, he says, O Krishna, O infallible, my illusion is now gone, and I've regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt and prepared to act according to your instructions. In other words, he's prepared to be successful in his life. And knowing your shape gives satisfaction. It gives satisfaction. We are all parts and parcels of Krishna. And if you try to do anything other than serve the whole, you'll not be satisfied. How does a finger satisfy itself? There's a bowl of sweet rice. So there's two ways to try for satisfaction. One is, the finger tries to enjoy the sweet rice directly by plunging into the sweet rice. Is that going to work? Now that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to achieve satisfaction by striving independent of God. On the other hand, if the finger takes the sweet rice, feeds it through the mouth into the stomach, then not only is the finger, but all the body satisfied. So by serving the Lord, we achieve satisfaction, not only for ourselves, but for all living beings as well, as it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita. And satisfaction comes from inside. It comes from being in touch with the Lord of the heart. Not from anything external. Not marital status, not financial situation, not votes of the public. It comes from knowing who you are. This is an old saying in India, that there's two ways to deal with climbing a mountain where there's sharp bushes and there's sharp rocks. One is to try and cover the whole mountain with a carpet. The other is just get yourself a good pair of shoes. So how much of our life do we try to be spent trying to change circumstances? How many billions of dollars to eradicate this disease and that disease? How much for cosmetics and liposuction and surgery? How many self-help programs are there out there where we're actually trying to change circumstances which we cannot change? But what we can change is ourselves. We can attach ourselves to Krishna as parts attach themselves to the whole, achieve deep inner satisfaction as a result of that attachment and that service, and be contented wherever we go in life, whatever the conditions are. Devotees have said, if I go to heaven and Krishna's not there, it's hell. If I go to hell and there's an opportunity to serve Krishna, then that's heaven. And finally, your self-esteem will rise. We're suffering from an epidemic of low self-esteem in this country and throughout the world. People just don't like themselves. But your self-esteem will rise based on the realization of two principles. One is that you matter to Krishna. Each and every one of you matters to Krishna. He laments every day, every minute, that you're lost and confused and wandering without having found your shape. And He's trying to get through to you. He's not trying to make your shape a secret. He's trying to communicate. Unfortunately, we got the TV on. We got the cell phone on our ear. Turn the TV off. Turn the cell phone off. Chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You know what that does, among other things? When you chant any bona fide name, it says, Lord, I'm here. I'm available. I've got the TV off. I've got the cell phone turned off. Please tell me who I am and what I'm supposed to do. And He will. He will. He's more anxious to communicate to us than we are to receive that communication. And secondly, you're created for a purpose. So our prayer at the end of this two-part series is that you'll be able to say, by the grace of God, I am what I am. That you'll not only accept what Krishna made you to be, but you'll enjoy it. And that you'll say, I want to contribute my uniqueness to the world for the glory of God. And please join me once again. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.